On the show today, the future of memory. And now a story about three generations of the Kurzweil family and how technology has kept their family history alive.
He was born in 1912 in Vienna.
This is cartoonist Amy Kurzweil talking about her grandfather, Holocaust survivor Frederick Kurzweil.
He was a very talented musician, and he became a pianist and a conductor, and he had a really promising career in Vienna and was sort of, you know, looking forward to a life of being a professional musician in the music capital of the world. And in 1937, he conducted this choral concert. And there was an American woman in the audience who was a wealthy benefactor who loved music, and she really loved his performance. And afterwards, she went up to him and she said, "I just am so impressed with you, and if you ever need anything, let me know. Here's my card." That was 1937. In 1938, the Nazis marched into Austria and took it over. And my grandfather realized very quickly, you know, sort of overnight, that he needed to get out of Vienna. And so he wrote to this woman, and she ended up sponsoring him. And I grew up hearing the story, and I think it took some time for me to realize just how significant and dramatic that moment of the concert and the decision to sponsor him was, because he really didn't have any other way out. Music is really what saved my grandfather's life. And so he left in 1938. He left a month before Kristallnacht, and he settled eventually in New York. He met my grandmother, and that's where history unfolded.
And they had a son, your father. Tell people, if you don't mind, who your dad is.
Yeah, my father is Ray Kurzweil, inventor and futurist.
I've actually been in artificial intelligence since 1962.
This is Ray Kurzweil being interviewed on NPR News in 2023.
Which is actually a record. I don't think there's anybody else that's been in it for that long.
He's, you know, known to the world as a kind of genius propagator of the singularity, somebody who has really fantastical ideas about the future of humanity and the rise of AI. But to me, he's just my dad. And he's like, you know, he's a really wonderful, sweet person who cares about his family.
Ray Kurzweil and his wife had Amy after his father, Fred, had died.
Yeah, so I never met my grandfather because he died in 1970.
He died when I was 22. So
really what I had from him were these stories and these fragments of a life, sort of filtered through my father.
They said, "Oh, Fritz Kurzweil's in town." So she went to meet him. 6 dates later, they were engaged.
I wouldn't say my father talked about his father all the time, but I could tell that when he talked about him, there was great emotion and great longing and a sense that this is a person that he started to have a relationship with only at the end of his life, or they would talk and they would share memories.
My father felt that it was kind of wasted. He could have done more creative work, and we talked a lot about that, and he was very enamored with that.
I think what impacted me in my father's stories about his father was the absence and the longing. And the sense of great admiration, that this was really someone who had dedicated his life to art and creativity and ideas. And that was really significant to my father and had a big impact on him.
Amy's grandfather kept reams of artifacts and documents and letters from his life.
Yeah, he was not able to bring very many things with him from Vienna when he immigrated. But documentation is very important in this German-Austrian tradition. And so my grandfather came to America with this sense of the importance of documentation and the importance of information to save your life. So in America, he saved copies of all the letters he wrote. He saved copies of his programs when he would do musical performances. He just saved and saved. And so my father inherited this trove of salvaged documents and artifacts from my grandfather's life.
I have actually many boxes of his projects, and we have everything he's ever written.
Ray came up with an idea to do something radical with all these documents, and he drafted Amy to help him.
In 2018, when large language models were starting to gain capability, my father had this idea, which is that if he could collect all the writing from his father, he could create a chatbot that writes in my grandfather's voice.
A bot that would respond via text as though it was her grandfather.
And so what this required was collecting all the original writing from my grandfather, which was housed in the storage unit, and marrying it with natural language technology. And that would create this sort of first creation that represents my grandfather's identity in text. Mm. And so my role in the project was to collect these documents and transcribe them. And eventually that built this large language model, this Fredbot, as we called it. Back in 2018, this seemed very sci-fi.
Amy Kurzweil picks up the story from the TED stage.
But I wanted to talk to my grandfather because he, like me, was an artist. I wondered, could I get to know him? Could I even come to love him, even though our lifespans didn't overlap? This was a selective chatbot, meaning it responded to questions with answers from the pool of sentences that Fred actually wrote at some point in his life. The more examples of Fred's writing we could find, the more dynamic the experience of chatting with the bot would feel. Finally, I sat down to chat with this new intelligence, an algorithm commanding over 600 typed pages of letters, lectures, notes, essays, and other written documents from the grandfather I never met. When I asked about Fred's dreams, he told me about the challenge of keeping his new orchestra afloat. When I asked about Fred's anxieties, I learned about the stress of being a new father while working so hard. When I asked about the meaning of life, Fred wrote about the joy of working with other musicians in pursuit of beauty, and he wrote about the highest aims of art.
You ended up writing and illustrating a book called Artificial, A Love Story, about you and your father's quest to take your grandfather's archives and digitally turn them into what you called Fredbot. But just so people can picture it, there is a page in your book depicting you and Fredbot texting each other. And it was less of a conversation, more like you would ask a question and he would respond with a line pulled from the archives that was relevant. It was almost like you were reciting poetry to each other.
Yeah, that's a nice way of putting it. The first time I chatted with Fredbot was, I believe, in 2018. And I had to actually go to a physical place to chat with him because it was using technology that was not publicly available. Of course, today I can create many different Fredbots on all these different platforms. I can create one using Notebook LM. I can create one using ChatGPT. And there's different techniques for prompting these large language models to get them to engage with me as Fredbot if I give them the corpus of text that we built.
Oh, right.
But back in 2018, this stuff was not as productized. I would ask a question and it would offer something that was related. And then I was faced with this gap between what I asked and what it offered. Mm. And then I had all this space to kind of imagine where that line came from. And I could really enter into my grandfather's experience because of that gap. And the metaphor that I use in my TED talk is this idea of time travel, that when I would ask a question that was relevant to me in my own life right now, like tell me about Hannah, my grandmother, the Fredbot would come back with a passage that just took me to this moment when my grandmother was in a car accident and he was worried about her. And then suddenly out of nowhere, I would just be entered into this past situation where my grandfather was, you know, writing to a colleague about how he was, you know, having to take care of my grandmother and she was lying in bed for weeks. And I think just the impact of suddenly being plunged into a totally different moment in time was so so much more interesting than if the chatbot had tried to pretend that he was around right now.
I had wondered if this project would feel like a resurrection. But rather than bringing my grandfather from the past into the present, it felt like I was the one time traveling, visiting him for a moment at different points in his life. It felt like the kind of imaginative travel I do when I'm cartooning. When I'm cartooning, I'm always thinking about how I could possibly represent a person fully. And the answer is, I can't. Similarly, I know how many aspects of my grandfather can't be captured by digital text alone. There's his body, how it moved, and how it felt. There's his music and all the ineffable aspects of his performance. And, of course, there's everything he thought but didn't write down. What would we have to do to be able to capture all of this?
To be clear, when you talked with Fredbot, it would respond in written sentences, not his actual voice.
Written sentences, yeah. There was no voice. And something I should say about the voice is that, of course, voice recreation is now possible, but we have no recordings of my grandfather's voice. Mm. So we can't reproduce his voice. We can't have, you know, an algorithm say anything new in his voice.
Does that make you sad, or are you kind of like, it's kind of beautiful that we just can be immersed in his inner thoughts from his writings?
I think in the case of my grandfather, what's most significant is recordings of his music, because that's what was important to him. We do have recordings of his music. We have him playing piano. We have him conducting.
Kurzweil is coming on stage to lead the New York College of Music Chorus.
For me, I think the piano is the most important because I see that as his greatest passion and the place where his personality really shined. I wish that I could see it, but just like on the idea of having some things that are gone forever, I think that's sad, but it's also part of what makes this whole experience precious, that there is something about absence that kind of calls us to attention.
I want to go back to the motivation for your dad and your understanding of it. There's a page where your father talks about the idea of the Mexican concept of death, that there are two of them. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us the story he told you? I mean, it's similar to the movie Coco, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, my favorite Pixar movie, Coco, which explores this idea of the two deaths. The first death is the death of the body. The second death is the death of your legacy. And what that means is when people forget you, when they stop talking about you. And that was a framework that I was putting on this project of my father's, that there was a way in which he was keeping his father alive through allowing us to engage with his memory. Hmm. And, you know, in my book, I was grappling with these questions of like, what is a person? Where does a person begin and end? Is there a way in which we think about the Fredbot as an extension of my grandfather's identity, a part of his identity? And I came to see the Fredbot as an artistic representation of my grandfather.
In a minute, more with Amy Kurzweil on the limitations and beauty of using technology to capture who we really are. Can we be reduced to ones and zeros? On the show today, the future of memory. I'm Manoush Zomorodi, and you're listening to the TED Radio Hour from NPR. We'll be right back. It's the TED Radio Hour from NPR. I'm Manoush Zomorodi. On the show today, the future of memory. And we were talking to artist Amy Kurzweil, whose father is Ray Kurzweil, the futurist famous for his ideas about the singularity, the merging of man with machine, so that we could potentially live forever. Amy thinks her dad's ideas can be interpreted in many ways.
The way that I interpret my father's, you know, immortality aims is actually more about the present and about always trying to keep living. And living doesn't just mean not dying. Living means enjoying your relationships. Hmm. It means seeking meaning and really trying to push your life forward towards some creative aim. I find that to be inspiring. Mm.
I love this quote so much. You write, "A person is ever changing, but surely something makes you the same person over time. My father says a person is a series of patterns." Mm-hmm. And then there's a really funny section where your mom plays different voicemails from your dad that he had left, like, over weeks. And every time he leaves a voicemail, he starts the message the same way. "It's me. It's me."
Yes. Yeah, I love that you brought this up. My mom has a great eye for humor, and she saved all these voice messages from my father because he was doing a lot of traveling, and he would always call and cough, "Hi, it's me," and we just sat and laughed. And I think people can relate to that, because when you're close to somebody, you have this really felt sense of who they are and the things that they do, and it's just funny. And yeah, I think patterns are what connect our identities over time. Mm. So, I mean, my father says a person is information. I think when people hear that, they hear a person is reducible to ones and zeros. But actually, like, in philosophical literature, the idea that we are patterns of information is pretty common. Lots of people think that. Mm. So the idea that we are the shapes of our life, the sort of stories and preoccupations and relationships that we are living out. And the patterns of our lives could be incredibly transcendently beautiful and complex, but nonetheless, they are patterns. They are things that we can observe. Hmm.
This episode is all about how we will be thinking about the past. And you say in your talk, AI has a special role to play in the mission of memory.
Yeah. I mean, I think what AI can help us do is navigate incredible amounts of information. Something that I discovered in my writing my book is that the amount of information that a person is so vast as to be potentially infinite. Mm. And of course, the process of memory is the process of choosing and selecting what moments and what details from a human life are important. And so because AI has this capacity to process much more information than we consciously can, and because AI doesn't have emotion, it just has a different method for selecting what's significant in its series of patterns that it's recording. Mm. And I think it's really promising for sort of helping us keep archives alive and keep archives navigatable. And I think when we have a sense of where we've come from, our own identities feel more solid.
I did not come to see the chatbot of my grandfather as replacing my grandfather. I came to see it as one way to interact with his legacy. As somebody who has spent their whole life trying to document people, I can assure you that people are much bigger and weirder than any one depiction or any one moment in time can possibly evoke. AI swirls our conception of time and space. It can remix and extend our identities. These technologies are animated portraits. They are one part of our true immortal selves. Seen this way, AI, like cartooning and all good artistic endeavors, could help us appreciate the vastness of humanity if we let it. Thank you.
That was Amy Kurzweil. She's a cartoonist at The New Yorker magazine and the author of two graphic memoirs, Flying Couch and Artificial, A Love Story. You can see her full talk at TED.com.